That, precisely, is what selfish means in this context. The question is, what is the level of the action? The whole idea of the selfish gene, with the stress properly applied to the last word, is that the unit of natural selection, i.e. the unit of self-interest, is not the selfish organism, not the selfish group or selfish species or selfish ecosystem, but the selfish gene. It is the gene that, in the form of information, either survives for many generations or does not. Unlike the gene and arguably the meme, the organism, the group, and the species are not the right kind of entity to serve as a unit in this sense, because they do not make exact copies of themselves and do not compete in a pool of such self-replicating entities. That is precisely what genes do, and that is the essentially logical justification for singling the gene out as the unit of selfishness in the special Darwinian sense of selfish. The most obvious way in which genes ensure their own selfish survival relative to other genes is by programming individual organisms to be selfish. There are indeed many circumstances in which survival of the individual organism will favour the survival of the genes that ride inside it. But different circumstances favour different tactics. There are circumstances, not particularly rare, in which genes ensure their own selfish survival by influencing organisms to behave altruistically. Those circumstances are now fairly well understood, and they fall into two main categories. A gene that programs individual organisms to favour their genetic kin is statistically likely to benefit copies of itself. Such a gene's frequency can increase in the gene pool to the point where kin altruism becomes the norm. Being good to one's own children is the obvious example, but it's not the only one. Bees, wasps, ants, termites, and to a lesser extent, certain vertebrates such as naked mole rats, meerkats, and acorn woodpeckers have evolved societies in which elder siblings care for younger siblings, with whom they are likely to share the genes for doing the caring. In general, as the late W.D. Hamilton showed, animals tend to care for, defend, share resources with, warn of danger, or otherwise show altruism towards close kin because of the statistical likelihood that kin will share copies of the same genes. The other main type of altruism for which we have a well-worked-out Darwinian rationale is reciprocal altruism. You scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. This theory, first introduced to evolutionary biology by Robert Trivers and often expressed in the mathematical language of game theory, does not depend upon shared genes. Indeed, it works just as well, probably even better, between members of widely different species when it is often called symbiosis. The principle is the basis of all trade and barter in humans too. The hunter needs a spear and the smith wants meat. The asymmetry brokers a deal. The bee needs nectar and the flower needs pollinating. Flowers can't fly, so they pay bees in the currency of nectar for the hire of their wings. Birds called honey guides can find bees' nests but can't break into them. Honey badgers, Raytels, can break into bees' nests but lack wings with which to search for them. Honey guides lead Raytels, and sometimes men, to honey by a special enticing flight used for no other purpose. Both sides benefit from the transaction. A crock of gold may lie under a large stone too heavy for its discoverer to move. He enlists the help of others, even though he then has to share the gold, because without their help, he would get none. The living kingdoms are rich in such mutualistic relationships. Buffaloes and oxpeckers, red tubular flowers and hummingbirds, groupers and cleaner wrasses, cows and their gut microorganisms. Reciprocal altruism works because of asymmetries in needs and incapacities to meet them. That is why it works especially well between different species. The asymmetries are greater.
In humans, IOUs and money are devices that permit delays in the transactions. The parties to the trade don't hand over the goods simultaneously, but can hold a debt over to the future, or even trade the debt on to others. As far as I know, no non-human animals in the wild have any direct equivalent of money. but memory of individual identity plays the same role more informally. Vampire bats learn which other individuals of their social group can be relied upon to pay their debts, in regurgitated blood,